We're gonna start something that promises to be a two-parter, but I don't know when the second part will be, because what I would like to do is for the next 2 weeks to do some Haggadah prep with you. I think that would probably be the best use of our time. And then at some point in the future, we'll pick up the thread of this shiur. As you will see, it encompasses a lot of very broad topics. We are right now in our study of the daf, finishing the second perek. We did a couple shiurim on the whole issue of Hashavat Aveda and its broad place within mitzvot, and the possibility of it being a subset of Ve'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, and on the other hand, it being associated with Lo Tigzol, perhaps more properly than the first perspective was an extension of Lo Tamor Adam Re'echa, to care for the other person's well-being and their property. And on the other hand, it being an extension of Lo Tigzol, and I suggested that really both are true, and it depends at what point along the continuum of Hashavat Aveda we're looking. But now I'd like to take a look at a topic that really springs forth from the end of the Perek and that encompasses so many other subtopics in halakha. To preface it, the world of education, both formal and non-formal, which are increasingly getting blurred these days, has had any number of fads. And that goes back at least 150 years. And the fads, as always is the case, as we've seen, are usually driven by a good idea. And then they either work or they don't work. And they stick around for a while, and then usually, if they're any good, they become minimally incorporated in the larger scheme of education, but they don't take over. And it is the style of things like this that at the very beginning, they have a tendency to really take over. In the 1970s, there was a movement within the world of education that impacted both in formal education, but had a very big impact in non-formal education. By non-formal education, I mean camps, youth groups, discussion groups, et cetera. And this is all when everything was done actually with people sitting in the same room together as opposed to on Zoom or all over the world. And that was a system that was referred to as values clarification. And the notion was that you would be given a particular dilemma, and the issue at bay was not so much what resolution you came up with, but what premises you assumed and what methodology you utilized to solve the dilemma. And I'll give an example right now because it's the one that hits home. And a popular one was something referred to as triage. Now, triage is something we are familiar with from the world of the emergency room, and it means sort of very quickly deciding on priorities. The fans of MASH are certainly familiar with this, when a bunch of different wounded people are brought in and they're all serious. Question: who needs the work first, and who needs the most attention, et cetera. And that's a decision that has to be made on the spot. But when it's not an actual thing, but a theoretical one, you have time to discuss and think about it. One of the most popular games that was part of values clarification was the deserted island and the boat. There are 15 people on an island. They got shipwrecked. And then you have a description of all 15 of them, who they are, their age, their ability, their infirmity, their education, et cetera. And then a boat shows up, which can take 10 people. And then you got to decide which 10 get to go. And of course, there's always some crank in the group that says, oh, just send another boat or have the people row and come back. Okay, fine. And then you say, well, that's not the point. And so you got to kind of clarify, we're here not really to save 10 lives, and ultimately, ideally, of course, 15, but rather to see how we feel about being forced to play God with lives, what decisions we would make. But this notion of triage is something that's really built into everything we do, because whenever we come to a party, come to a gathering, come to a simcha, and we see a lot of people there, we make a choice to spend time with one person over another based on all sorts of calculations, which would include how close am I to them, how much do they rely on me spending time with them for their well-being, How critical is this moment for them? So, of course, if I'm at a wedding and I am a teacher of the chatan earlier in life, and I haven't seen the boy for a long time, and the chatan wants to talk to me, I drop the conversation I'm having with anybody else and go over there. In any case, the chatan makes that request. On the other hand, if I'm sitting and schmoozing with somebody I see every day, that becomes less critical. Somebody comes up and they are in dire need to speak right now. They have an emotional emergency or a halachic question or something of that sort, then that takes precedence. And we all do this all the time with all sorts of things. And as we see in the Mishnah that takes us towards the end of the Perek, at the end of the Perek, triage is something that's built into halacha, and Aveda, Shavat Aveda, is an interesting sort of not just a test case, but sort of a springboard for it. So let's take a look without further ado, and any further talk about educational fads, etc. One last note about that, as I mentioned, often educational fads that do have some value, and many of them don't, but that do have some value, end up getting incorporated and sticking around in a more subtle way into the larger educational scheme. But the first time that they're brought in, they take over and they become entire programs and they get funded, et cetera, and then they slowly, if there's enough people who are caught by it, get incorporated and then they become part of the scene and the next fad comes along and takes over and kachaze. Okay, so the Mishnah at the end of our Perek has the following lines, and I'm going to quickly skip through the first two because we're going to touch on that later on. Avedat tov, avedat aviv. Shelo kodemet. So you found an item that belonged to you, and you found an item that belonged to your father, then yours comes first. Now, just to be clear, what does that mean, yours comes first? I mean, I'm not sure what it means. You have two items there. One belongs to you, one belongs to your father. What does going first mean? But remember that the way the Torah presents an Aveda, the classic case, the examples used in the Torah are an animal that's wandering. And so you really cannot give attention to all of them at one time. So you see a donkey that's wandering in one direction, and then there's another donkey that you know is your father's donkey, the story of Shaul, that's wandering in a different direction. Which one do you go and grab? The answer is you go and grab your own. Avedat tov, avedat rabo, shelo kodemet. If it's your lost item and your Rebbe's lost item, yours comes first. Now, if we were to stop at that point, which is never a good idea, to stop in the middle of a Mishnah. But if you stop at that point and ask, well, doesn't the first line already give me the second line? In other words, if you're saying that when I'm faced with an item that I want to retrieve, to save, and there's two of them and they're going in opposite directions, or I don't have hands enough for both or whatever, and one of them is mine and one of them belongs to the most important person in my life that I'm supposed to honor and respect, and that's my father, I still come first. Do you need to tell me that if the other one is my Rebbe's, that I come first? And hasn't that principle already been established by the first line, which is that your own stuff comes first? We're going to explore this later on, but I really want to cut to the third line and everything that follows from that. Avedat aviv vavedat rabo. So now you see a donkey wandering north, and that's your father's, and a donkey wandering south, and that's your Rebbe's. Shelo rabo kodemet mishel aviv. You go after your Rebbe's donkey to save it before your father's. Obviously, if you can do both, you do both. What's the logic? Your father brought you into this world. Your Rebbe, who taught you wisdom, brought you to the world to come. Hopefully not too soon. But the idea is that your Rebbe gave you eternal life by teaching you Torah. Your father gave you your physical life. Now, that line alone, which I highlighted, really needs to be picked apart. And we're going to do it for a little bit right now, but there's way more there. First of all, what does this line tell you about establishing priorities, at least when it comes to Hashavat Avedah, and maybe more? What does that line tell you?
Your Rebbe of your parents.
Yes, but what's the logic behind it? In other words,
Olam haba olam hazeh.
okay, but keep going. Now, in other words, the mitzvah of Hashavat Avedah, and this is going to reflect back on the first two shiurim of Hashavat Avedah that we did. Notice what the thinking is. You have a choice. You can't do both. And one of them is your father's, one of them is your Rebbe's. Your Rebbe's comes first, And the reason is because your Rebbe gave you wisdom that leads you to the world to come, whereas your father only biologically birthed you into this world. Now we're going to deal with nuances in that in the next Mishnah, but for right now, what does that tell you about Hashavat Avidah and priorities in Hashavat Avidah? In other words, are they based on genealogical proximity? Are they based on social standing? What are the priorities based on? So this line, the highlighted line here, the end of the Mishnah Yod Gimel, seems to indicate that the priorities are based on your debt of gratitude to the person, which is not to be assumed. It's not the default position to say, I should save that guy's thing because I owe him more gratitude than I owe that person. And then we figure, how do we measure that gratitude? It's based on what that person's given you in their life. And the person gave you physical life. That's a tremendous debt of gratitude. Person gave you spiritual life. That's an even greater debt of gratitude. So you have to get his thing first. But you see, this is not assumed. And there's not anything that you would know without saying it. All right, so are we all clear on that? I want to move on from there. The next Mishnah then starts playing a little bit of the triage game. Remember, when we play triage, again, we got the 15 people on the island, and one of them is a young woman who is not married. She's a heroin addict, and she's got a little baby. And one of them is a 90-year-old saintly guy who's a philosopher. You got to always have some of those two in the mix, and then make your choice about who you want to save. But the considerations in saving are the big part of the game in that case, which is, am I trying to build the ideal community of survivors afterwards, in which case I need a wise person, on the other hand, I need young, healthy people, or am I just looking at the inherent value of life of each person and saving them based on that? Those are very different considerations. And that's what leads to a lot of the very spirited discussions around that topic. So now here, when it comes to Avedah, it looks like from the Mishnah that it's not based on, sorry to say it, the inherent value of that person or even the inherent value of that person to society, but rather the subjective debt that the finder owes to each of those people. The greater the debt, the more the priority goes. Okay, do you see that? So then the next Mishnah plays these against each other. Im haya aviv shakul keneged rabo. Let's say your father was as an equal to your Rebbe in wisdom, but he wasn't your Rebbe. In other words, you studied with your father when you were a kid, but you went off to yeshiva and you studied with your Rebbe, and your Rebbe became really your mentor, but your father is also a great scholar. Then avedat aviv kodemet. Then your father's avedah comes first. Now, how does that work? What's the idea behind this calculus? So up until we finished Mishnah Yod Gimel, it seemed that the idea was absolutely subjective. In what debt do I owe to each of these people? And the greater the debt, the more that they get priority. When I start Mishnah Yod Dalet, suddenly it's no longer subjective, but it becomes objective, meaning which one of them is of greater stature. So if my Rebbe who taught me and gave me that great gift, and my father who gave me the other great gift of life and is also of equal stature to my Rebbe, then my father comes first. So suddenly the debt of gratitude is no longer the single player. Now, haya aviv o rabo nosim masui. Now watch what happens with this priority system. Let's say that your father and your Rebbe were each carrying a load, or had their animal carrying a load, and they're trying to fix the load. So now we're talking about the mitzvah of prika and tina. And if you remember from the last 2 weeks, we saw how much in the Midrash Halacha, remember that Tosfot Arosh that said the two are learned from each other, how the Rambam put them on the same list and Sefer Mitzvot, in the same area and Sefer Mitzvot, the mitzvah of Avedah and prika and tina come together. And here it's presented in the same way as maniach et shel abo v'chakach maniach et shel aviv. So your father is sitting there struggling with a load, trying to get it off his animal, and your Rebbe, the same thing. You help your Rebbe first and then your father, presumably because of the same consideration that's in the highlighted line at the end of Yod Gimel. Haya aviv rabo b'veit hashevi. Now this becomes we're raising the stakes by a factor of almost infinite here. Your father and your Rebbe are both in captivity. Now, this is not the captivity that we are suffering from this year. This is captivity of ransoming, which would happen often in the Roman era, where brigands would come and take people and then announce a price for them. And so now, podet rabo v'chaka podet aviv, the priority goes to your Rebbe. And presumably, we pick up on the same nuance of the beginning of Yod Daled, which is, but if your father is of equal stature to your Rebbe in wisdom, then your father comes first because he also gave you your life. Maya aviv tamid chachamim, here we go. If your father is a tamid chachamim, we'll talk about that word in a minute, podet aviv v'chaka podet rabo. So this is just a slight variation on the beginning of Yod Daled, which is that if your father is also a scholar, now here he no longer has to be a scholar of the same weight of your Rebbe, but he's also a scholar, then your father comes first and then your Rebbe. So there's kind of a few different nuances playing here into the consideration of who comes first, who you have to take care of first. I just want to talk about Talmid Chachamim. What do we call a scholar? What's our phrase for a scholar?
Talmid Chacham.
Talmid Chacham. Right, good. Notice the Mishnah calls him Talmid Chachamim. All right. Let's try this. What is my daughter who studied with me and studied with Rav Kahn, Zichro Livracha, and studies with Rav Nachbar, Yibadel L'Chaim, studies with Rav Berger, Yibadel L'Chaim, all of these teachers. Let's just say for a minute, all of her teachers are, well, it doesn't matter. She studies with all those teachers, all right? What would you call her?
Talmida Chachamim,
I guess. Talmidat Chachamim. Why Talmidat? Why is it the construct mode? Because she's the student of. Talmid Chacham doesn't mean a smart student. It means a student of a Chacham. And therefore, a girl who is really bright, but her teachers, at least one of her teachers is male, is a Talmidat Chachamim. Now, people typically say, oh, she's really bright, she's a Talmida Chachama. That'll only work if her only teacher was a woman. She only had one teacher, and that teacher was a woman. Oh. Just, you know, a little bit of a nuance of language. In any case, that's the Mishnah. Now, take a look at the Tosefta, and the Tosefta is going to expand things here in a classic Tosefta style. You'll see. Avidat Rabo v'Avidat Aviv. Avidat Rabo Kodemet l'Avidat Aviv. Notice what doesn't happen in the Tosefta is the logic behind it, which is your Rebbe brought you to the world to come, and your father brought you only into this world. But rather, just the rule, which is your Rebbe comes first. This is unusual for the Tosefta, because you would expect if the Mishnah starts giving reasons for things, the Tosefta would certainly do that. But you'll see another expansion in the Tosefta. Exactly like the Mishnah, that if your father and your Rebbe were of same stature, then your father comes first. Remember, when it came to redeeming him from captivity, he didn't have to be of the same stature. He just had to be in the class of Talmid Chachamim. Ve'ezuhu Rabo, this is the expansion. What do you call your Rebbe? Meaning, we've got this theoretical state called Rebbe. It's a theoretical construct, the Platonic Rebbe, if you will. Right? What defines something as your Rebbe? And by the way, notice it's not Rav, it's not Chacham, it's Rabo. Because again, it's not who the person is, but who the person is to me. And so now, what makes him my Rebbe? So Rabo Shalimdo Torah Velo Rabo Shalimdo Umanut. Now to us, this may seem like a no-brainer, because that's because we don't understand what the term rabbi means. Okay, so let's start with this. What does the term rabbi mean? We say rabbi in English. What does it mean?
Teacher.
I know, a guy who gets a tax break of some sort. What?
Teacher.
Okay, but almost. What does that actually mean? It means my teacher. Right? Now, we don't use it that way, and I'm not trying to try to language revolution here, but the way we use it is a title. But rabbi means my master. Right, and that's kind of what we're talking here about who is the person to me. So first of all, the word Rav is used in Tanaitic literature to not only refer to the one who teaches you Torah, but the one who teaches you anything, including somebody who teaches you a trade. And so here they're saying, for this, the purpose of these halachot, Rabbo is only Rabbo Shalim Do Torah and not who taught you a trade. So even though you may be sandlar, you know, a shoemaker, a cobbler, and you have somebody who, since you were a kid, was teaching you, your parents hired him, and you've apprenticed with him, and he really taught you, he's the reason you can make a living. And you owe him a lot of kavod, but he's not the Rebbe we're talking about here. It's Rabbo Shalim Do Torah. So now, what is your Rebbe? Because, by the way, everybody studies with multiple people. You all study with multiple people, and I've studied with multiple people. So what is your Rebbe? Because the Mishnah and Tosefta all seem to be referring to a single person. Just like you have one father, you have one Rebbe. So which is that Rebbe that in some circumstances will take precedence to your father for this? So the first line is Shalimdo Patach Lo Tchila, meaning your first Rebbe. Your first Rebbe is your Rebbe, which would mean the Rebbe who taught you to read, or taught you Breshit, or whatever it might be. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbo Shalimdo Chochma, Lo Rabbo Shalimdo Mikra. Rabbi Meir disagrees. Your Rebbe is somebody who taught you wisdom, not Tanakh. Interesting. But what does Rabbi Meir mean by that? So what does it mean to study Mikra? It's not referring to an analytic shiur on Parshat Shavua or on some book in Tanakh. It's talking about learning how to read Tanakh and translate. So that's not your Rebbe for these purposes, because he has not increased your analytic skills or your ability to reason, but he simply taught you how to read. That's Rebbe Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Sherov Talmudo Mimenu. Rabbi Yehuda says, if a majority of your Talmud, meaning your learning, is from him, that's your Rebbe. Which, by the way, Rabbi Yehuda's position automatically makes it singular. There can only be one person who taught me majority of my wisdom. It could be I have none. It could be I learned 30% with him, and 30% with him, and 40% with him. But, and then the question is the 40% going to count? But I can't have more than one who taught me Rov Chochmato or Rov Talmudo. Reb Meir's could be a lot of different people. And then it's not Rabbo versus Aviv, it's Rabbo, 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 Rabbo versus Aviv. And your father Nebuch, your father's donkeys could be long gone by then. Rabbi Yose Omer, Kol Sheheir Einav B'Mishnato. Anybody who illuminated your understanding in your Mishnah. Now, let's take a look at what this means. Mishnato means you have been trained and memorized Mishnah. Mishnah is apodictic. Mishnah is almost always presented as is, as a fiat, that's the rule, without the reasoning, without the concept, without any ability to apply it further. Which is why the Gemara famously says in Sota that Hatanaim Mevale Olam or Mechale Olam. Tanaim, meaning people who, the understanding here is, people who all they know is the repetition of the Mishnah, and if they use that to try to render decisions, then they destroy the world, because they don't really understand what they're saying. They don't understand the concept. They don't understand how to apply it. So Rav Yossi says, anybody who enlightened you in your Mishnah, meaning explained the Mishnah to you so you understood what it really meant, is your Rebbe. Now notice that Rav Meir and Rav Yossi, you could have multiple people who are called your Rebbe. Rabbi Yehuda and Tanakama, there can only be one. Tanakama says whoever taught you first. Rabbi Yehuda says whoever taught you most. All right, so that also becomes a difficulty, because the language of the Mishnah and the Tosefta seem to be referring to one versus one. One father, one Rebbe. Who comes first? All right, just put it out there. Now, Avidat Aviv, Avidat Imo. Interesting problem. One we don't face in our Mishnah. But the Tosefta expands it. There's my father's donkey. There's my mother's Nichse Malog donkey going off. Avidat Aviv Kodem Avidat Imo. You have to go off to your father's first. What's that based on? What principle? What other law in the Torah is that based on? Kabed et.
Kabed
et. Right? And let's say, and remember the halacha in Masachet Kiddushin, Father says, please get me a glass of water, or get me a glass of water. And mother says, please get me a glass of water. And everything else is equal. Their ability, the time they asked, everything else is equal. Well, who are you supposed to get for it? So I do not know any father who will not say to his kid, take care of your mother first. But from your perspective, what are you supposed to do first?
Father.
Father first. And the statement is, who v'imo chayavim b'chor aviv. The mother also really needs to help out her husband, the father. Right? So here that plays out to me. I've got my father's donkey going north, my mother's donkey going south. I should go after my father's donkey first. Eimatai. Now watch this. Bizman shehi tachtav. Right? That's only when your parents are married. Because she is somewhat subject to his domain. Ha'ena tachtav shneim shavim. But if, let's say, your parents are no longer married, or they made an arrangement where, you know, they're married, they're very happily married, but they got separate accounts. They no longer have the traditional, the default transactional relationship of halacha, then shneim shavim, mother and father are now equal. Now, you may remember this from the sugya about kibur ava'im. If you remember, kibur ava'im, even though daughters are also chayav in kibur aveim, and if the daughter's married, she's actually exempted from kibur av, because kibur av is essentially a financial obligation, if you recall that from the first parak of Kiddushin. And that's why the Gemara then says, but if she's divorced, and if she's married, she's exempt because she doesn't have access to funds. But the minute she's divorced, then she becomes equally chayav than her brothers are, right? So the same thing here, the avedah then equals out. Avedah ta'ish v'avedah ta'isha. This will be very, very unpopular. Sorry. Avedah ta'ish kodem el avedah ta'isha. So now, these people aren't related to me. They're not my teachers. I see a donkey that I know belongs to Chaim, and I see another donkey that belongs to Sarah. Sarah and Chaim are not related to each other. I'm supposed to go get Chaim's first. And again, these are always in cases where I can't do both, can't grab both of them, they're going opposite directions, whatever it may be. Clearly, in every one of these cases, the ideal is you help everybody. Nobody's asking that. But what we're seeing is some interesting distillations here. We're going to come back to these psukim later on, because I want to jump right now to a series of mishnayot that are really a kovetz. Remember, we've talked about this before. Numerous times, when there are places where Rabbi Yehuda Nasi put together a series of Mishnayot that topically are from all over the place, but style-wise, nuance-wise, or principle-wise, and more critically, pattern-wise, have a common theme or common style, and if we put them together. The classic example of this, of course, is the Ein Beins. Remember the Ein Beins in Megillah. Right, mm-hmm. Beginning of Megillah, we say if you read Megillah in Adar, and then they added another Adar, you have to read it again or not. And then Ein Bein Adar Rishon Adar Sheni El Mikra Megillah Matanot Lavyonim, that these two things are exactly alike except in this way. And then it goes on to a whole tangent. There's no difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov except Ochel Nefesh. There's no difference in Shabbat and Yom Kippurim except who punishes you. There's no difference between the Darin and Davot. On and on, Zav and Metzora and Shiloh and Yerushalayim, all sorts of other things, that the only thing they have in common is the literary style of Ein Bein X L'Y L'Q. And then the unit of the Gemara, of course, is, oh, you mean for everything besides Q, they're alike, and we challenge that and discuss it. So that's a kovetz. There's another kovetz at the end of Masechet Horayot. The reason I'm identifying it as a kovetz is because you already know the first of these Mishnayot from somewhere else. All right, let's see. Kol atadir michavero kodem chavero. You know that halacha. That which is more frequent comes first. Okay, we know that. So what's a classic example of that? Is we daven shachrit before Musaf. There's other reasons for that too. What's a classic example of that? Friday night you make kiddush. How many brachot do you make? You make two. What's the order?
Prayer
Gafen first, because it's Tadir, and then Mekadesh Shabbat, because less Tadir. All right, this Shabbat we're going to read from two Sifrei Torah. Now we're going to read Parshat Shmini from one, and we're going to read Parshat HaChodesh from another one. Which do we read first? Shmini.
Shmini.
The regular Parsha is Tadir. Then the one that comes once a year comes next. All right, good. Now, that rule is a rule that is in Masachet Zvachim. Perak Yod, Mishnah Aleph, Kol HaTadir Michavero, Kodemet Chavero, and it's about Korbanot. That's where this halacha starts. The next halacha, Kol HaMukudash Michavero, Kodemet Chavero, that which is more sanctified than another comes first, is also in that same Mishnah in Zvachim. All right? Now, continuing on, Par Mashiach Upar Eda Umdin. Let's say that the Kohen Gadol, remember this halacha, this is what hits Horeyot. The Kohen Gadol made an errant ruling in an area that involves karet, and he himself acted on it. Remember, this is Horeyot. He has to bring a korban. When he finds out, he has to bring a korban that's a special korban, par chatat kohen gadol, known as par mashiach. And let's say that at the same time, the Beit Din also made an errant ruling in that area, and a majority of the people, majority of the tribes, all lots of diunim, what majority means, acted on it. They have to bring a korban. Now, let's say both of those korbanot are there. Which do we process first? Par Mashiach kodem lepar eda ulecho masav. The answer is the Kohen Gadol comes first. Okay. Now, notice the first two of these halachot are broad halachot in korbanot. The third one is halacha that's unique to horayot. They have to do with particular korbanot that are the obligation to people or group that made an errant ruling in halacha and the followers acted on it or the person himself acted on it. Now, watch this. Ha'ish kodem la'isha. Men come before women. Lahachayoto ulashiva veda. Now, by the way, this is the Mishnah. This is not in the Mishnah in Masachet Bav Metzia, but this is in the Tosefta, which is the man's aveda comes first. Haisha kodemet laish lichsut ulotzia mibeit hashivya. On the other hand, let's say that you have a woman and a man, and they come before you for tzedakah, and the tzedakah that they're each asking for is they need money for clothing. The woman comes first because it's more of a shame for her to be without clothes, and also for redemption from captivity. The woman comes first. Why? So you'll see in a second. But if both of them are subject to or about to be, this is painful to talk about this here, but are subject or about to be abused sexually, Aish kodem laisha, then you redeem the man first. Like Mark discusses why.
Oh.
Right? Because it's more shameful for the man than for the woman, because what's happening to the man is an unnatural act. Now, wait for the punchline at the end. It's going to change everything that we talk about. Kohen kodem lelevi. Does that sound familiar? Now, we don't know what that's for. And in a minute, you'll see it's not for Aliyot. Levi li Yisrael. Yisrael le Mamzer. Okay, so Mamzer is below a regular Yisrael. Mamzer le Natin. And Natin, if you remember, were any member of the seven nations that converted, become what's called Natinim. Natin lager, somebody who was not born Jewish and converted. Viger le Eben Meshuchar, somebody who was an Eben Kani was freed. Right, and now we don't know what this hierarchy is about, meaning this priority is for what purpose. Is it for saving a life? Is it for redeeming them? Is it for giving them tzedakah? For honoring them? We don't know. Ematai, when is this true? Now, by the way, when is this true? Goes back to all of Mishnah Chet and Tet, meaning Chet and Tet are about people. Zion is about mitzvot. Which mitzvah comes first? But chet and tet about people, man for woman, woman for man, kohen levi, etc. Ematai, when does this hierarchy happen? Bizman shekulan shavim. If you got a bunch of people and they're all of otherwise equal status, and we'll see what that means. Aval, very famous line, and this is the end of Masachet Horayot in the Mishnah. Im hayam mamzer tamid chachamim. Let's say you have a mamzer, meaning somebody who's lower on the status chart, but who's a Talmud Chacham? A Kohen Gadol am Haaretz. And you've got a Kohen Gadol who's an ignoramus, which, by the way, unfortunately, that was not a theoretical possibility only in the times of Bayit Sheni. It really happened. Remember in the Mishnah at the beginning of Yoma, they had to go through everything with the Kohen Gadol and make sure that he knew everything and go over it every day for 7 days, bring him the Korbanot. In some cases, he had no idea what he was doing. And by the way, remember, the Kohen Gadol that night, Yom Kippur night, had to stay up all night, remember? So he wouldn't fall asleep and become Tameh, right? And how would he stay up? Remember?
They'd walk him.
So if he knew how to learn, he would teach. So other people would come around, he would teach them all night. If not, they would teach him. And if not, they would read some Tanakh. And as you imagine, here's a Kohen Gadol, the most spiritual guy in all Jewish people, who not only can't give a shir, can't even listen to a shir. Pretty sad. All right, so now, Bizman aval imayad mamzer tamid chachamim b'kohen gadol am haaretz, mamzer tamid chachamim kodem l'kohen gadol am haaretz. Even somebody who's a mamzer, but he is a scholar, has priority over even a kohen gadol who is an ignoramus. Now, before going further, what do you see in Mishnah Chet and Tet? Before the corrective in the middle of Tet, you see, to use a contemporary term, you see essentially identity politics, meaning nothing to do with who you are and what you've earned and what you made of yourself, but simply what gender you are, what tribe you are, whatever it might be, determines your place in society. And if we stop before the word ematai, I don't know about you, but I'd be kind of depressed. You're saying that halakha values or places a value on somebody simply because of the accident of their birth. And don't call it an accident, but because of something that they have no control over. And then the last line changes everything, which is, that's all the case if we have to make a determination, like break a tie, because otherwise both of these people that we're looking to save or to honor or whatever it might be are of otherwise equal contribution, status, merit, accomplishment. But if one of them is accomplished more in Torah, he comes first, and we don't look at that all the stuff, which we've gone back to meritocracy. Thank you, meritocracy. All right, we've gone to what you've earned in your life. It's a fascinating window into kind of what plagues our society today about this idea that your identity seems to be completely imprinted and your value and your place in society seems to be completely determined by something you had no control over, who your parents are, when you were born, etc., race, gender, etc. And then suddenly the last line comes along and says, yeah, but your own accomplishments are way more important than that. And that really determines who you are. But what you see in these three Mishnayot is suddenly the notion of triage, as it were, the notion of priorities among people is something that is not limited to Avedah. It's true about saving lives. It's true about giving tzedakah. It's true about a whole range of things, because, of course, we do have to make such determinations. Any society, let's say benevolent society within a community, where money is raised to help the poor, somebody has to make a decision about who I give the money to and how much money I can give, because there's this many poor people. And how do I make that determination? I do not envy the people who have to make those determinations. Now, you'll notice that the Tosefta here, and this is just an eye into the Tosefta here, this represents the same swath. Take a look at the Mishnah, three short Mishnayot. You see it there, Zayin Chetet? Now, look at Tosefta that covers the same kind of area. Look at that. In Tosefta, in classic style, expands a lot on this whole idea. And it starts again with Par Mashiach, and then it gives an explanation why, and it quotes Psukim to support why one would come before the other. Notice that Hu ve'aviv rabo omdim b'shevi. This is not in the Mishnah. You, your father, and your Rebbe are in captivity. Hu kodem l'rabo v'rabo kodem l'aviv. V'imo kodem l'chol adam. You come first, then your Rebbe, then your father. But if your mother's there, she comes before everybody else. Right? Ezehu rabo, and take a look at it. And here we have the four different opinions that we saw in the Tosefta and Bab Metzia. They're also in the Tosefta and Horayot, of what tells you, what determines what your Rebbe is. And again, Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda have only one person who could be, and Rabbi Yossi have multiple, it could be a lot of different people. right? And there's an expansion here on each versus each other. And then there's all sorts of stories, famous stories, about Pidyon Shvuyim, a story with Rabbi Yeshua and a child that he saved in Rome, right? And lots more ideas about the idea. I want you to show the end of it. The very end of it is a quote from Tehillim, Kuf Tet Vav. We actually Kuf. It's a combination of Kuf Lamed He and Kuf Tet Vav, which are different parts of sort of Hallel. Kuf Tet Vav is Hallel, what we call Hallel. Kuf Lamed He is Kuf Lamed He and Kuf Lamed Vav, are what we call Hallel Gadol. Beit Yisrael Baruch Hu Atah Adonai, Beit Aaron Baruch Hu Atah Adonai, Beit Halevi Baruch Hu Atah Adonai, Yirei Adonai Baruch Hu Atah Adonai. That's the end. Sorry, that's the end of Perek Kuf Lamed He. The next line is Baruch Adonai Mitzvion Shochein Yerushalayim Hallelujah, and then there's Hallel Hagadol. Notice the take on it, and it's just the end of the Tosefta. It has nothing to do with our topic, but it's just so cool. I don't want to leave it alone. So you see, Yisrael bless once, because Beit Yisrael Baruch Hu Hashem. Beit Aaron Rachin Shtayim. So Beit Aaron, because they're second in there, they go second. Beit Alevim Varchin Shalosh. And Yirei Hashem Varchin Arba. Yirei Hashem, the assumption is Yirei Hashem in those passages in Tehillim. You're familiar with that from Halal also, right? Yomuna Yirei Hashem. Is Yirei Hashem is non-Jews who've come to the Mikdash to worship from a distance. That they get number four. But notice that all of Am Yisrael is first, and then Kohen, then Levi, then the outsiders. So not Kohen, Levi, Yisrael. Am Yisrael first, and then, you know, which again is something of a palliative to the whole hierarchical structure. Sorry. Okay. So now I just want to show you something in the Yerushalmi on our Mishnah, which echoes the Tosefta, but then tells us a story about it. Avedat Tov, Avedat Aviv, v'chulei. That's our Mishnah that we're talking about, which is that if you found your Avida, your Rebbe's Avida, but then your Rebbe's Avida, your father's Avida, your Rebbe comes first because your Rebbe brought you to Olam Haba. Tani, Ezehu Rabbo Shelimdo Chochmah. So what does that mean? Your Rebbe who taught you Chochmah. Kol Shepatach Lo Tchila Divrei Rab Meir. We've already seen this. Rabbi Yudan, we saw it with Rabbi Yuda. Omer Kol Sherov Talmudom Menu. Rabbi Yossi Omer Kol Sheirei Nav B'Mishnato. Now, in this version of the Yerushalmi, you'll notice that the four opinions that we had in the Tosefta became three. You notice that? Remember the four opinions we had in the Tosefta? The first was unnamed, and that was whoever taught you first. The second one was Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, who taught you Chochmah and not Mikra. Then when Rabbi Yehuda said, whoever taught you majority, Rabbi Yossi said, whoever enlightened you in a Mishnah. In the Yerushalmi's version of that Tosefta, the second opinion disappears. And the first one becomes Rabbi Meir's. I don't know why that happened, but that's what happened. So Rabbi Meir's opinion, based on the Yerushalmi, is whoever taught you first, it can only be one. Rabbi Yehuda said, whoever taught you majority, could only be one. Rabbi Yossi says, whoever enlightened you in the understanding of a Mishnah, and that could be a lot of people. And then the Gemara says, really cool. Rav Karebi Meir. We're now talking early generations, first, second generation. Rav Karebi Meir, meaning Rav acted and Paskin like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yochanan Karebi Yehuda. And Shmuel Karebi Yossi. All right, let's hear the story. But the reason the story is so fascinating is because it utilizes what we would think is a very different litmus test for what's defined as your Rebbe. Remember, we're discussing who is defined as my Rebbe such that his Avedah comes before my father's. That's what we're asking. And now we said, what defines your Rebbe? And we have three different opinions now instead of four. And then we find out that Rav ruled like Rabbi Meir, which is whoever taught you first. And Rabbi Yochanan ruled like Rabbi Yehuda, whoever taught you most. And Shmuel, Paschal, like Rabbi Yossi, which is whoever enlightened you in the understanding of a Mishnah, which could be a lot of people. Watch how the litmus test plays out. Rav Karebi Meir, why is that? Now, by the way, quick question. For whom do you tear kriya? When you hear somebody dies, for whom do you tear kriya? Tear kriya, by the way, sorry. Tear kriya is like good yontif and my machronim vaser. But what I mean is, for whom do you tear your clothes?
Mother, father.
Right, keep going.
Wife,
okay.
Spouse. Brother.
Yeah.
Brother, sister, children.
Right. The seven relatives from whom we mourn, except you left out maybe the most significant, which is your Rebbe. Right? Where's perhaps the most famous example of that in Tanakh? When Eliyahu and Elisha are in the Yarden, and Elisha sees him, and the chariot comes down, the fiery chariot. And Eliyahu gets on the chariot and goes up to Shemayim. What does Elisha do? He tears his clothes. Avi, Avi, Rechav Yisrael for Hashav, right? And so you tear your clothes for your Rebbe when your Rebbe has to. Now, I remember it was the first time I ever went to a Pesach program, which goes back to around the time of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And I was actually invited to come for Chol HaMoed to the end to give some shiur. I was single at the time, and it was 1993. And I drove to the program, and there was a fellow there who was one of the scholars in residence who was a very close student of the Rav. And when I arrived, I first saw him, and his shirt was torn. And that's why I found out the Rav had passed away. This is the day that our Rabbi, Rav Soloveitchik, passed away. So watch this. Rav Kareb Meir, right, the first bullet, the bullet point. Chad Barnash Patach Pume de Rav. There was a particular person who first taught Rav. I mean, when Rav was a little kid, he was a little kid in Bavel. He wasn't called Rav then, it was Abba. Vishama de Dmach, he heard that he died. Uvaza Eloi, he tore his clothes. So Rav had somebody who was a cheder teacher, whoever it was. He found out he died, he tore his clothes. Rabbi Yochanan Karabi Yehuda, which is majority, right? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Salik Mitveria Letzipori. This is, by the way, Yerushalmi. You notice the Aramaic's a little bit different than what you're used to. Rabbi Yochanan was going up from Tiveria up to Tzipori. By the way, up is really up. Tzipori is top of the hill. Tiveria, as you know, is right on the sea. Chama Chad Barnash Nachat Min Taman. He saw somebody was running from there. Amarle Ma Kola Bevendinto. What's going on, basically? Amarle Chad Rabban Demach. There's some rabbi who died. Everybody's running up to participate in, you know, the funeral. Yadar Yochanan de Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yochanan evidently knew this had to be Rabbi Chanina. Now, Rabbi Chanina, if you recall, was the Chacham who took over for Rabbi Yudan Nasi. When Rabbi Yudan Nasi passed away, Rabbi Chanina was his close student who took over for him, and he was a teacher of Rabbi Yochanan. We hear Rabbi Yochanan quoting him from time to time. Truth is, we hear Rabbi Yochanan quoting other people far more, specifically Rabbi Yanai. But here we find out that Rabbi Chanina was a major teacher of Rabbi Yochanan. Shalach v'ayti manin tavin deshuvta. Interesting. Rabbi Yochanan sent the message on the road, sent the message back to his home in Tveria, and had his Shabbat clothes brought to him. Uvezaun, and then he tore them. In other words, he put on nicer clothes and tore them. V'lo chen tane, wait a second. Don't we already know the halacha? Kol kera she'eno shel behala eno kera? Now, this goes against what the common custom is, which is, by the way, when do most people tear? For what? Where? At what point do they do it, typically?
At the gravesite.
They do it at a gravesite. I did it in all the cases. For my mother, for my father, for my brother many years ago, for my Rebbe, from Liechtenstein, the minute I heard. But notice the statement, kol kera she'eno shel behala eino kera. Any kera that's not the result of panic and confusion is not a kera. Meaning it has to be an emotional reaction, and it can't be a planned thing. So why would Rabbi Yochanan say, hey, let's go get me those nice clothes, bring them over, and I'll tear kriya. It seems to be a little bit, tear kriya again, it's a problematic phrase, but I'll tear them, seems to be against halacha. The answer is Rabbi Yochanan by me'ava deraba umkrita. He wanted to show great honor to Rabbi Chanina. So the way he did it was having Dafka Shabbos clothes brought, and then he tore them. But we don't know whether Rabbi Yochanan did it because Rabbi Chanina was his Rebbe, or was it because you tear for Shmuot Ra'ot? You tear when you hear terrible news. I don't know what would have happened in the Jewish world had October 7th been on a weekday. I don't know if people would have, immediately they heard the news of this terrible attack, if they would have torn. I don't know, but theoretically that's what it's supposed to do for Shmuel wrote. So Milte de Rabbi Chia Barva Betzipori. Chamakule Almapari. So now they tell the story of Rabbi Chia, not the famous Rabbi Chia, in Tzipori. Chamakule Almapari. He saw everybody running. Amarle Lama Kule Almapari. Why is everybody running? Amrinle Rabbi Yochanan and Yativ Darish Bavemi Drasha Rabbi Banya. Rabbi Yochanan's giving a teaching in the Beit Midrash. And this could be that same, when he finally got to Tzipor, it could be. Everybody's running to go hear him. Now, why is this story here? Because it's a beautiful offset. We're trying to prove that Rabbi Yochanan ruled like Rabbi Yehuda, that you the Rebbe that you consider your Rebbe is who taught you a majority of your wisdom. And how do we prove it? So Rav Karamir was easy because Rav had one person who taught him his first thing they ever learned. And when he heard he died, he tore. Rabbi Yochanan found out that Rabbi Chanina died because everybody was running. He's going up to Tzipori and everybody's running down to Tver, running up to Tzipori. And he said, why are they running? Because Rabbi Chanina died. Everybody's going to participate in the funeral. So he tore. And then we don't know if he tore because he was his Rebbe or because of Shmuel wrote, which means we really don't know what he holds about Rebbe. What your Rebbe is. And now we have a story. And it involves Rabbi Yochanan also. How beautiful is that? That in Tzipori, everybody was running to the running. And so the Rabbi Chia said, why are they running? This is again not our Rabbi Chia, the famous student of Rebbe. This is a later Rabbi Chia. It's a common name. It's form of Chaim, what we call Chaim. All right. And he says, Barich Rachmona Dechame Lifurin Anda Anava Chaim. Thank God I'm seeing people while I'm still running, while I'm still alive. Meaning that they're running for something else besides for a death. And he said, and I taught him everything except Mishle and Kohelet. Aha, hada amra, kol tamid v'talmid. So here now what we see is that everybody who's a student goes running. It's not just your prize student, or it's not somebody who's only Rabbi, which means this may not actually settle the issue of who you define as a Rebbe. So before we get to Shmuel, because you're going to see a similar thing, what do you see about the stories they're telling and the psak relative to the issue of Hashavat Avedah? When it comes to Hashavat Avedah, and we saw it in Tosefta, your Rebbe is defined as, and we have three or four different opinions. And those have to do with the measure of his impact on your life. We'll say it that way. And now we try to prove how each one of the early Amoraim ruled based on who they tore for. Do you understand? It's a different metric. Who they tore for when they heard somebody died, who they tore for. So Rav tore for the person who taught him his first thing. Rabbi Yochanan, presumably, Rabbi Chanina was the one who taught him a majority, so he tore for him. Shmuel k'Rabbi Yossi Amar. Why? Here's the story. Chad Barnash Aspar leShmuel b'shnei maftechot echad yored ma'amat beit hashachi v'chad poteach kivan. It's a Mishnah in Masachet Midot. And Midot, if you recall, is a Masachet which is defined to describing the structure of the Beit HaMikdash. It's Herod's Mikdash, meaning the last one that was built, and where the entrances were, where the stairs were, with the way that they would go to use the bathroom below, all the different details. And there's a Mishnah there that says that they had two different keys, two different entrances, one that went down here, etc. And Shmuel didn't understand it. So a particular person explained to Shmuel what that line was. La'mat beit hashechi v'chad poteach kevan, he explained what it meant. I'm not concerned the details now. Shamad didmachu v'za'aloi. And when Shmuel heard that that fellow died, he tore. Which means this is somebody who's a relative nobody. You know, we don't know his name. It's Chad Barnash, some guy. But because he once explained a Mishnah to Shmuel and clarified what it meant, Shmuel tore, which means Shmuel would tear for lots of different people who taught him, besides obviously who his main Rebbe was very likely his father, Rav Yehuda Shmuel. So what you see here is that the Mishnah that stated Avidat Rabbo, and I'm summarizing up because I want summarizing because I want to get to this last piece here, is that the Mishnah that said Avidat Rabbo versus Avidat Aviv, and how to define what is called Rabbo, and then we had all sorts of other things for which Rabbo was significant, such as Pidyon Shvuyim and such as Prika and Teina, right? And then we have to define what Rabbo is. And so we saw in the Tosefta four opinions. By the time we got to the Rishalmi, one of them had kind of disappeared, and the first one became associated with Reb Meir. And then we see different Chachamim who ruled in different ways, but the litmus test for it was not Hashavat Avidah, it was Kriya. and that's kind of the whole flow of what we've seen here. The last thing I want to do with you is something that, again, cuts to the issue of priorities and just a wild Rambam. And if you remember, we saw in Horeyot, Kohen Kodem Levi, Levi Yisrael, but we saw that that was not about issues of, let's say, an Aliyah, because there were a whole bunch of other people there on the list that it didn't seem to fit that model. But we have the Mishnah in Gittin. Now, if you recall, now, Kurt, this is for you. If you recall, the fourth and fifth prakim of Gittin are not about Gittin. The fourth parak starts with a Mishnah about Gittin, about nullifying an agent who's bringing a get out of his earshot and out of earshot of the woman, and the takana of Gamliel Hazaken that you're not allowed to do it. And that was Nei Tikkun HaOlam. And then we're off to the races with all the Tikkun HaOlam things, Prusbul, and redeeming captives for more than their value, and redeeming Sifrei Torah, all sorts of other things, Tikkun HaOlam. And that continues into the middle of the fifth parak. At the end of the fifth parak, there's a kind of a narrowing of the focus to a subset of Tikkun HaOlam, which is called Darkei Shalom. Eilu Dvarim Amnu Bnei Darkei Shalom. The following things were established by the rabbis in order to keep the peace. And the first one on the list is Kohen Kore Rishon, Acharav Levi, Acharav Yisrael, Bnei Darkei Shalom. Kohen Levi Yisrael, just so we keep the peace, so the people don't fight over who gets the first aliyah. I remember hearing the story, a guy walks into shul. What's the first thing on Shabbos morning that somebody asks you if you walk into shul?
Kohen,
Levi Yisrael. Kohen, are you a Levi? And his answer was, I'm a Shishi. Right? So, you know, people fight, they want to get the aliyah. So that's the Mishnah. The Rambam in his Parash HaMishneot, and this is what we'll have time for to look at, because it's a fascinating comment. And the Rambam, remember, wrote Parash HaMishneot when he was young. He finished the whole project when he was 30. Da ki zeh davar mefursam b'chol ha'aratzot. The Rambam says, this which is well known everywhere, Shakoen korei b'vet ha'knesset rishon. The Kohen gets the first aliyah. And by the way, first aliyah here means he actually reads first. Doesn't mean he stands up there, says a bracha, and somebody else reads. He reads first. Bein im haya tamir chachamim o'am aretz. The Kohen gets that first aliyah, whether he is a scholar or not. Bein im nimtza sham mishi gadol menu b'chachma o'lo nimtza. Whether there's a greater sage in the room or not. Harehu davar she'in lo ikar b'torah klal. When you hear what the Rambam says. This notion that a Kohen, no matter what, gets the first aliyah, even if he's an ignoramus, and there's a greater scholar in the room, he says, has no basis in the Torah whatsoever. V'lo nizkar zeh b'Talmud. You don't find it anywhere in the Talmud. By the way, he's commenting on the Mishnah that says Kohen goes first. He has to explain it. V'lo zuya kavana nirmazeh lehabazot halacha. That's not what this Mishnah is about. V'ani mitpaleh me'od. Notice the Rambam is kind of going on this. He says, I'm really surprised. Al hayot arei adom gam kein al zeh minhag. Meaning in the West, that they have this custom. Even though they're fairly cleansed from all of the bad customs that have arisen lately, they really are careful about keeping the Talmud. It's unclear where he's referring to, but it very likely is referring to Central Europe. I have no idea where this came from. Now, he's still got to explain our Mishnah. V'omnam tzurat ha-davar l'fi ma sheba lanu ha-kabbalah bo. Our traditional understanding of this is, Re'kamo she'itbayar, v'zeh sha'koin kodim l'levi, levi l'Yisrael. So that's the order. Why do you sanctify and show honor to the Kohen first? Because he is the one who brings the korbanot. And because it says v'kidashto, that means for any matter of kedusha, he comes first. Liftoach rishon, that's to read the Torah. Livarech rishon, at a meal you have the Kohen say a motzi. Litom manayafa rishon, you have him take the first nice course. He always comes first. Kol ze im lo ya sham chacham menu. All of this is only if there's no greater sage. We got Kohanim, Levim, Yisrael, and they're all pretty much the same level of scholarship. By the way, the one measuring tool is not wealth, it's not height, it's not age, it's wisdom. Right? And one of them is not significantly or noticeably wiser than the other. Then you fall back on this Kohen Levi Yisrael thing. And again, this comes back to identity politics taking a back seat to merit. And that, and the Rambam is very strong on this, as you can see. And he says, V'yukdam ha-kohen v'acharav ha-levi v'acharav ha-israeli. Then you have Kohen Levi Yisrael. V'od yavo l'chal ha-shon zeh b'sof ha-rayot. And he proves it from the Mishnah that we saw in Horayot. When do we say Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, Mamzer, Natin, etc.? That's if they're otherwise equal. Even somebody who's a Mamzer, who be his own personal status because of birth is certainly lowly, nonetheless, he goes before even the Kohen Gadol, who's in ignoramus, if he is a Tamid Chacham. Talmud, I don't know if you remember this, but in the sugya Megillah of how many aliyot do we have on a fast day, whether it's three or four. And in it, they tell a story that Rav got up to read from the Torah, made the bracha, and didn't make the closing bracha. And Rav himself was a Yisrael. And they said, well, how could that happen? Because in those days, they only made the opening bracha at the beginning, and the closing bracha at the end. But other people got aliyot, did not make brachot. Remember that from Megillah? She said, it must be that Rav read the first aliyah, because Rav was considered greater than all the Kohanim in the room. So he got the first aliyah. Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Hagdolim, Shukwane, Eretz Yisrael, you know Chachim. And they say that in this particular case, that's one way of reading the Gemara, there were two of the great Kohanim of Eretz Yisrael, Rav Ami and Rav Asi, were in the room, and Rav still got the first aliyah. Nei shayach chachamim, because he was wiser than they. V'chein amru, Rav kara b'kani, that's the story. V'tzalem har kara rishon kama kohen, v'ayoto chachamim ha-kohanim ha-nochachim. V'zeh in machloket po. He says, nobody disagrees with that, that if there's a greater talmid chacham, you should get the first aliyah. And by the way, Shulchan Aruch does say this while accepting Kohen Levi Yisrael, which means, who should get shlishi, is the greatest chacham in the room. And if you have a few Levim, and one of them is Rabbi Soloveitchik, he gets Levi, as an example. So it's within the set. But I've never seen anybody actually do this, where they say, yeah, we got Kohen Levi, but the great Talmid Chacham will get the first Aliyah, unless he's a Kohen. We haven't seen that. We have our friend who tells all the Kohenim to get out of the room, and that's a different story, and a different problem. Uminaikarim gam ken, shakohen asher haya ra'ui likor rishon, here's another piece. Let's say there's a Kohen who's a great scholar, and let's say he cedes the honor to a Yisrael. He's allowed to do that. The Kohen's allowed to say, no, he should go first, a non-Kohen. We don't allow that to happen, because then you get into fighting. Because the Kohen turns around and says, no, let him take the honor. Then other people say, why don't I get the honor? Right? That's why. Why do you let him get up, not me? That is sad. So the Rambam then says what the Mishnah is, Darkei Shalom, is really Kohen Levi Yisrael is kind of a default breakdown when you don't have any better way to do it. But since the Kohen is allowed to say, you know what, let him go first, we don't allow them to do it, because then people are going to fight. How come they didn't let me go first? etc. So what you see here is a wild addition to the issue of the triage, if you will, where we started, and the priorities in honor among people, where the Rambam says that ultimately the meritocracy really should be the way it carries the day. And if there's a great chacham, automatically you should get the first aliyah, regardless of his tribal identity. And it's only because of situations where we don't have any sort of a tiebreaker that we go to Kohen Levi Yisrael. But we don't allow the Kohen to himself give the honor to somebody else, cede it to somebody, because then there'll be a fight. Oh, I give it to him and not to me, etc. We're going to look at the next time, which may be in a number of weeks when we get back to this, is going to be the broader picture of the whole issue of priorities in when it comes to interpersonal mitzvot. We're going to have some other things to do in the meantime, including I'm going to make the suggestion that for the next 2 weeks, we focus on the Haggadah in preparation, and that then after Pesach, we'll come back to this topic. Okay.